Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavata, Canto 4, Chapter 11, entitled Swayambhuva Manu advises Dhruva Maharaj to stop fighting. And we have two texts today. Text 1 and text 2, and text 2 is on the board, so I'll read myself text 1. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Maitreya Uvacha. I read by myself because Nishamya Gadatam Evam Rishinam Dhanusi Dhruva Sandadhi Stram Upasprisha Yan Rayana Nirmitam. Translation. Sri Maitreya said, "My dear Vidura, when Dhruva Maharaj heard the encouraging words of the great sages, he performed the achaman by touching water and then took up his arrow made by Lord Narayan and fixed it up upon his bow." Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Dhruva Maharaj was given a specific arrow made by Lord Narayan himself, and he now fixed it upon his bow to finish the illusory atmosphere created by the yakshas. As it is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, "Mam eva ye prapadyante mayam etam tarantite." Without Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, no one is able to overcome the action of the illusory energy. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has also given us a nice weapon for this age, as stated in the Bhagavatam, Sangopangastra. In this age, the Narayanastra, or weapon to drive away Maya, is the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra in pursuance of the associates of Lord Chaitanya, such as Advaita Prabhu, Nityananda, Gadadhar, and Srivas. Text 2. Sandhyamana etasmin maya bhuyaka nirmitaha kshipram vireshur vidura klesha jnano dayayataha.
Maya. Vaishnavis.
Sandiyamane, while joining to his bow. Bow or bow, how do you say? Bow. Etasmin, this Narayan Astra. Maya, delusions. Guhyaka Nirmitaha, created by the Yakshas. Kshipram, very soon, Vineshu, were destroyed. Vidura, O Vidura, Kleshaha, illusory pains and pleasures. Jnana Udaye, upon the arising of knowledge. Yata, just as, translation, as soon as Dhruva Maharaj joined the Narayanastra arrow to his bow, the illusion created by the Yakshas was immediately vanquished. Just as all material pains and pleasures are vanquished when one becomes fully cognizant of the self. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Krishna is like the sun. A maya, or the illusory energy of Krishna, is like darkness. Darkness means absence of light. Similarly, maya means absence of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness and maya are always there, side by side. As soon as there is awakening of Krishna consciousness, all the illusory pains and pleasures of material existence are vanquished. Mayam etam tarantite. Constant chanting of the Maha Mantra will keep us always aloof from the illusory energy of Maya. Om Agyati Mirandasya Gananjana Sarakaya Sakshara Militar Nina Tasmai Shri Vairma. Krishna Padaya Krishna Vastaya Buddhaya Srimad Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pacharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarine Vansha Kalpataru Vishakri Pasindu Vasha Patitanam Pavane Bhu Vaishnavir Bhu Namo Nama. Translation again, if you like to repeat. As soon as Dhruva Maharaj joined the Narayanastra arrow to his bow, the illusion created by the Yakshas was immediately vanquished. Just as all material pains and pleasures are vanquished when one becomes fully cognizant of the self. Here in the many other passages of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we see how killing people is not necessarily against the principles of devotional service. And we also see how there is a sense of Krishna. Krishna likes weapons for some reason. And that this is in Narayana form and many other forms. He has this relation with weapons. In the material world, weapons are a major source of power. generally people who have more weapons, countries who have more weapons, nuclear weapons, they have a much more influence, they're much more respected, and they're often able to defend themselves much better. Krishna could do the same without weapons. Just like Krishna can produce the sounds even without the flute. He could just whistle and then produce the same sound. Krishna is not limited. But somehow there is a relation with this flute. He's a devotee. The flute is a devotee, is a living entity, and that's his service, to come close to the lips of Krishna and facilitate, or at least be a vehicle for Krishna's musical nature to manifest. So similarly, Krishna can do any martial or warlike activity, killing demons and so on, without weapons. He doesn't need weapons, doesn't need the instruments. He could just send some sort of death ray or some other form of killing energy. But just by thinking, he could just make people's head blown away or things like that. But still, he likes to have weapons. And in fact, you see, especially the Narayana form is always surrounded by weapons. There's a beautiful picture of the Srimad Bhagavatam, I believe it's 11th canto or 12th canto, in the cover, where there's Narayana and his weapons, his symbols, associate in a personified form. And they're very beautiful, they look very powerful. You know that picture? You've seen it, no? So they look very beautiful, they look very powerful, they look very alert. This is their service, apparently. Seems to be a dasya rasa type of thing. And Krishna likes these devotees, and Krishna likes their mood. And because they reflect his mood, Krishna has this aspect, especially again as a Narayana, is the supreme king. And supreme kings, they do have the sense of fighting. It's like in the first canto we see how when Maharaj Parikshit goes and conquers the earth or inspects the earth, it is said that for a Kshatriya to approach a fighting opportunity is like for a sportman to approach a match. Some of you may have experienced, or at least all of you, I think, have seen some sport match, that would be cricket or football, or some other match, but there is that sense of chivalry, that sense of competition. And obviously, it's technically it's not necessary. Nobody needs to play football, nobody needs to play tennis or cricket, but there is that sense that, no, I want to step on the field and I want to beat my opponent. And so society has arranged, or society, I mean, it's even in the spiritual world, there are sports events. And that competition mood, the confrontational mood is there. The chivalry, which is not only the technical aspect of the sports skill, but is also the fact of the sense of ego, in the material world at least, the sense of ego, the sense of boasting, that I defeated you, and like that. And again, it's not necessary. And there are, of course, those who have experience when you play football, for instance, you get few kicks, you get few pushes. Sometimes you break a leg or two. But you know that the risk is there. Sometimes you get your ball in your face, things like that. But still, those who like sports, those who like to participate, they like to do it. So for a simile, for a kshatriya, he loves to loves weapons, and Krishna in his he has this side very much developed. He loves weapon. He loves his Sudarshan. He loves his Komodaki, and he loves to use them also. I don't know where is that. I think a third canto where it describes the meditation of the yogis. I think third canto where Kapila Deva describes the meditation of the yogi. The yogi meditates on the form of the Lord. And when it comes to komodaki, his mace, it says the komodaki weapon which is mixed with the blood of the demons. And it's a yogic meditation. Meditation should, that the yogi should meditate on the komodaki and not just clean and, shining or polished. No, with the blood of the demons sticking there. Better if fresh and dripping on the floor. So this side of the Lord is there. Paritranaya sadhanam vinashaya chaduskritam. He comes to protect the devotees and he comes to destroy the demons, and he does it. He does it in Vrindavan, he does it elsewhere. He does it through his devotees. Sometimes he leaves the honor to Balaram, but he does it. And so Srila Prabhupada explains that the Vaishnava is generally non-violent. And but generally, the stress being on the word generally. So the Vaishnava is not looking for a fight, but at the same time, he doesn't step away from a fight if there is need for that. So I have a couple of references here I wanted to share with you. I wanted to read because sometimes you say Prabhupada said, but you never know if he really said it. So first one on the non-violent aspect. There's one gentleman, his name was Robert Hendry, and somehow he wrote to Srila Prabhupada with this idea that he envisioned one party of 300 soldiers traveling the world and chanting Hare Krishna. And so Srila Prabhupada, he encouraged him. He says that I'm always dreaming of the world Sankirtan party. By your idea of marching 300 soldiers all over the world with the Hare Krishna mantra is almost in fulfillment of my dream. Almost. Like, it's a similar idea. It's not exactly what Srila Prabhupada had in mind, but it's almost a fulfillment of my dream. So he encourages this gentleman. But then, of course, he explains that Krishna consciousness is also a sort of fight, but not with rifles. Our weapon is no. Wait, yes, but not in this letter. Let's see if we get our weapons is two more tries. Huh? Books.
Knowledge.
Our weapons is cartels. Which actually is also a quite effective weapon. The devotees have experience when they attacked in Harinam. Cartels can be also very good weapons. But I don't think Prabhupada meant it in this way. Like that, in this age there's no need of fighting with rifles, and it's interesting why he says, in this age there's no need of fighting with rifles, because the population is so poor that they're already killed by so many disturbances. They're short-lived, poor in knowledge, slack in advancement of spiritual life, unfortunate, and embarrassed by so many miserable conditions of life, like war, famine, pestilence, poverty, and so on. So, to kill these persons by rifle is like killing, it's like bringing a cannon for killing a mosquito.
It's just they're not worth,
you know, they're just not worth. They're already dead, you know. So Lord Chaitanya introduced this fighting principle of Sankirtan movement. Okay, so I don't know. Anybody knows what happened to this Robert Hendry? It was in 1969. Okay. God, mercy, Shri Prabhupada. And there's an interesting, I find this interesting. I use it sometimes in my some presentations. This is a letter to Hamsadutta, who was a leader at the time, 1972, he was a GBC. And it seems that there was some problem with some hoodlums, some antisocial elements who apparently had attacked the temple and created some trouble. So Srila Prabhupada says, "I've read your account of the incident of fighting with the hoodlums with great concern. Krishna fought with so many demons, so fighting is not prohibited if it is for the good cause. But one thing is, these are young boys. So actually, if you approach them humbly, and you yourself go to their leaders and speak to them nicely about Krishna consciousness, they will agree to leave us alone." So Srila Prabhupada promotes first the non-violent approach, a diplomatic approach, a sweet kind. "But if you make big armed confrontation and show strength, there will be continuous fighting more and more. Better to resolve the whole situation by approaching the leaders at once and reconciling everything with them, by bringing them prasadam and other nice gifts and giving them our philosophy. And if they are willing to hear, also teach them how to chant Hare Krishna mantra. These are innocent young boys. They're simply misled. So you go to them and give them the right information, and then you will have nothing more to fear from them." That's the first part. Second part. "But if you think buying a shotgun is necessary, that is all right. We have to defend Krishna's temple if it comes to it." So obviously it needs a little bit of balance, a little bit of maturity to not to get away, you know, to get over excited about the possibility of fighting. Because again, the mood should be non-violent means, because violence, it's nice. In some cases, it can be very nice. But there are also consequences, like Srila Prabhupada says, that you fight them, they fight you, it goes on and on. Sometimes we know in the different parts of the world that there's generations, because their grandfather did something to my grandfather, so then they started fighting between families, between different things, and it goes on forever. Some places in the world are famous for this. For these vendettas, for this revenge, that doesn't have any end. Doesn't have any end. So, Srila Prabhupada said, better not bring them prasada, bring some nice gifts. But if you need a shotgun, then buy it. And use it also, if need be. Like that. So another aspect, again, I want to read because I want to show these things are true, as not just making them up. This is some dialogue with the leaders, especially Tamal Krishna Maharaj. It happened here in Mayapur in February 77. And it's a room conversation. So apparently it happened here in the Lotus building, in Shri Prabhupada room. It seems that the devotees in North America were being disturbed by different people who would try to break the sales of the books in the airports, especially. It seems that the programmers got together, and this is how we can hurt the Hare Krishna movement, by hurting the sales of their books. And so there was an organized thing that when the devotees would distribute in the airport, somebody would come up and say, "Don't buy the book! Don't buy the book! They're cheaters," and this and that. So then there was a dialogue. Tamakrishna Maharaj was saying how, and now we move to somebody else, and we move to some other place, and this and that. We try to, so it didn't hurt the sales very much. It didn't hurt book distribution very much. But there was a problem. Then he says a specific case. He says, there was one man, very, very big, this is Tamakrishna Maharaj. There was one man, very, very big demon, who was breaking up all the sales in one airport. So finally the devotees hired a professional man. I let you imagine what could be the profession of this professional man. Hired a professional man. And this professional watched how this man went home. And after about a month of observing him, this professional man, he's stressing, he's professional, not just an amateur. This professional man hid himself near the man's garage. So when the man came back home, after disturbing our sales for 5 months, the professional beat him very severely. Srila Prabhupada, that's nice. And then Tamal Krishna said, Maharaj said, and then he never came back again. Prabhupada, that's it. Tit for tat. Tamal Krishna Maharaj, yes, he never came back. Srila Prabhupada, so we should adopt that means. Anyone who is opposing, give him good beating. Okay, so this is our founder Acharya. And then Harisori Prabhu was there in a room of Srila Prabhupada. As long as we do it very discreetly. Prabhupada, no, this was very, very nicely done. That hiding in the garage. And as soon as, oh, beat, give them, hey. I don't know exactly, especially. Okay. So, okay, last two. I mean, there is more, but just Tamal Krishna. And he could understand. He could understand it was the devotees who arranged this. And he could understand, there was no proof, but he could understand very well why he was beaten. Prabhupada, yes. Prabhu says that it's just when they get taken before Yamaraj at the end of their lives, it says in the Bhagavatam, they understand all their past sinful activities, now they are getting punished for it. Srila Prabhupada, yes, that is allowed, that is within Krishna consciousness. So here we have Dhruva Maharaj. In this section, there is a lot of these issues within violence, use of violence, but the appropriate use of violence. In fact, the whole chapter is entitled Swayambhuva Manu advises Dhruva Maharaj to stop fighting. And we'll see later why. I don't want to give away too much of the chapter. But violence should be properly applied. One other element of violence, especially of the ruling class, the kings, is punishing the criminals. It's a major aspect of social life, political life, government, because kshatriya means, I think you all know, kshatriya comes from the word protecting from harm. So the major aspect of a kshatriya society is protecting the society. When there are some antisocial elements that disturb the society, either because they cheat or because they hurt innocent people, the society, in the form of his arms, in the form of his kings and kshatriyas, they have to protect the society. And part of that protection sometimes is the death penalty. Srila Prabhupada spoke in favor of the death penalty. He explained that it's actually a form of mercy, because if the person, say the murderer, if the murderer doesn't get killed, he will go to hell. If he gets killed by the king, his karma is removed, and he can even go to the heavenly planets. It's so purifying. But of course, there is always the major consideration of the how appropriate is the punishment? Is the person really guilty? There's a lot of discussion in the world about death penalty, and especially in the West, means Europe, America. There's a lot of initiatives to stop death penalty in the world. Of course, some countries have no intention whatsoever to stop the death penalty. It's part of the culture, part of the system. It works for them. And it also saves them a lot of money, because it costs money to keep somebody in jail. It costs much less to kill somebody. Like in China, when they kill a criminal, they even charge the family of the criminal for the bullet. And generally it's quite a quick thing. It's a quick thing. I mean, not Chinese law, but from what I know, they kill a lot of people. They kill about 5,000 people every year. So today, we are here peacefully in Mayapur, 5,000, maybe more than 100 people will be killed in China, average. So, it's part of the administration of the thing. Now, again, of course, the judges and the ruling government, they should be careful that they really deserve this. So the point of application, it's a very crucial point. But the principle is accepted. So it's 8:30. Any question or comments? Sureshwar Prabhu, do we have a mic for you?
Sometimes I think we need a Kshatriya element inside ISKCON. Because very often we pass very nice resolutions and then they're not observed. And a Kshatriya is, one part of his portfolio is enforcing the law. So what do you think about Kshatriyas, trained Kshatriyas, professional Kshatriyas? Within ISKCON, who would be trained according to, Balang Balavatam Chaham, Kamaraga Vivarjitam, I am the strength of the strong, devoid of passion and desire. Dispassionate but effective professional Kshatriyas. What do you think about a Kshatriya element in ISKCON?
What I think about a Kshatriya element? I'll tell you that Kshatriya element is certainly a natural feature of society. We all know the analogy of the body, with the head, the legs, the abdomen or the stomach, and the arms. So in any society there is a Kshatriya element. It's just Chatur Varnam, Quattro, four varnas, and mixing with some language.
Maybe I should rephrase it.
No, let me come to your point. Definitely we have people, there will be a percentage of people who have some Kshatriya tendencies. Now, we should be very careful. I'm not saying in relation to your question, I'm saying in general. We should be very careful to understand what Kshatriya tendencies are, and understand that the main mood is protection. And fighting is a means to the end of protection. So it's a divine or noble aim. Sometimes I see that there is some sort of misconception or preconception or imaginary idea what the kshatra is. Sometimes you have some children playing and there's someone who beats them up, other children up, and then the mother goes, see, he's a kshatriya. But he's not a kshatriya, he's just a rakshasa. Because if he were a kshatriya, he would protect them, not beat them up. So not everybody was some bully in themselves because of some inferiority complex of some, you know, unfortunate childhood is a kshatriya. Kshatriyas were highly functional and psychologically adjusted people. So we should understand. And we should also understand, it's not everybody who fights is a kshatriya. And then the soldiers are not generally kshatriyas. Foot soldiers are not kshatriyas. Neither in the Vedic time nor nowadays. They're professional fighters. They are hired hands to fight for the government, or like this professional hired by the devotees. It's not necessarily kshatriya. He's a criminal. He's a criminal. But, you know, you remove a thorn with another thorn, so if you need be, you engage a criminal. I mean, one who is a professional, he beats people for, as a professional. He's not a kshatriya. He's a gunda, what do you call it? It's a... So, we have to be very careful what being kshatriya tendency. Not that any feeling of aggression, any feeling of, is a kshatriya, is that. It's just passion, tamas guna, destruction, not feeling to destroy something. Like that. Just like once Srila Prabhupada was in a park in Australia, and there was a statue of a Viking. And one devotee said, Srila Prabhupada, were the Vikings kshatriyas? And Srila Prabhupada said, no, they were murderers. If you know the history of Europe, that's what they were. They would attack different countries and they kill people, just kill monks. In Ireland, for instance, they would come from Sweden, Norway, and just attack, come there and kill the monks, steal everything. That's not a kshatriya. That's not a kshatriya. They are looters. Okay, so this is the introduction. So we need to understand, not every guard that stands at the door is a kshatriya. They're generally they're shudras. Not mean shudras. They should have some skills, fighting skills. Yeah, they may be a little more passionate, they're a little more bold, they may have a little more courage, but that does not make them kshatriyas. So kshatriyas, yes, we need kshatriyas, and I believe we do have devotees who have this kshatriya tendency, that they're willing to sacrifice their comfort for the protection of the movement, for the protection of the devotees. It's part of devotee care, basically, service of the devotee, Vaishnava Seva. And yes, your point is well taken. We pass laws which are supposedly for the good of society and should be executed. And I mean, analyzing that maybe it will take us a little bit of it far afield right now, but I agree that for the good of society should be some executive power. Of course, the laws should also be done in according to Shastra and everything, so like that.
I was thinking as early as 1974 when Prabhupada first started talking about Varnashram colleges. Varnashram colleges.
Yeah.
Kshatriya school was part of the picture. Kshatriya school, Kshatriya element was part of the picture.
Yes.
Because, as you suggest, it's all parts of the social body. So in hearing your answer, perhaps we just haven't been ready yet because we're not... it takes quite a bit of qualification, just as it takes quite a bit of a qualification to have an authentic Brahminical community, it takes quite a bit of qualification to have an authentic Kshatriya community. So perhaps it's coming, but we just haven't been ready yet, mature enough yet. What do you think?
I think that there's no... See, if you say training, what do you want them to study? First of all, like if you see Manu Samhita, everybody goes to everybody. The Dvijas go to Gurukul, and they serve the Guru as Brahmacharis. Generally, the Brahmanas go earlier and stay longer. Kshatriya comes a little later, and they come out a little earlier. And then Vaishyas come also a little later, and they come out of the Gurukul a little earlier. So, but Kshatriyas definitely go to Gurukul, then they work as a menial servant of the Guru, and they work. So within the Gurukul, their Brahmacharis, there's no distinction. So the training is the same. So yes, you may add a few, say, Chanakya Pandit, Niti Shastra, and all that, you know, diplomacy, make friend, make enemy, this, that, you know, you may want to add that. But that anybody can read it by themselves, if they, you know, if they like, if they, you know, you can download it from the internet for free, probably. But again, it's a mood, it's a motivation. And just like we have in any aspect of Varnashram, generally in ISKCON, we have a simplified form. Know, like in Brahmanas, they may not do the technical yagyas of you know, bygone ages with that mantras and this and that. They focus for it. They may do some yagyas because it's part of culture, it's part of the process. Here, Prabhupada introduce five yagyas, so we do that. But yeah, it's kind of simplified. You know, we fixed on that. We don't teach just anything. The Brahmanas will teach a lot of things. So for there may be some curriculum for Kshatriya, maybe Dhanurveda or something. But again, I would stress that the mood, the motivation, the attitude, that's the main thing. And there are Kshatriyas, although you may not... See, Brahmanas in one sense is more recognizable because we all more or less dress like Brahmanas. It is the culture of every Vaishnava, it's Brahminical culture. While you eat, how you eat, how you get up in the morning, chanting, reading, shastra, and this and that. Everybody does that. So it's more like a default culture in a Vaishnava society. So Kshatriya, again, often because we don't have the external trappings or the external symbols, sometimes it's more hard to define who is a Kshatriya. You know, you don't see people with swords, with big mustaches, a big turban, so they say, well, there are no Kshatriyas. I'm sure there may be, maybe even this room, or the next room, I don't know. There may be some Kshatriyas, and some people do have that attitude.
Also, even in our schools, we have the beginning of the governance aspect of Kshatriya in things like ISKCON Leads. Those programs coming up where more and more leadership and management.
And how is that relate to Kshatriyas?
Well, that's a side of Kshatriya, governance.
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 Govern, like as in governing body commission, how to govern. That's also a Kshatriya side. But anyway, well, we have that coming up in ISKCON, so I think it is starting to happen on that side.
I went through the, my Maharaj is here, so it's good as a live reference. I went through the curriculum of the ISKCON Leeds. I had a chance to teach a class within the ISKCON Leeds, a seminar, and I don't remember seeing anything really so closely related to governance in the Kshatriya sense. There are things about administration, keeping accounts, but that, you know, anybody can keep accounts. It's not that you need a Kshatriya to check the books, things like that. Yeah, maybe the mood that, okay, you need to check the books, that's a Kshatriya mood, protect the society. But checking the books, or, you know, it's not really, I mean, the Kshatriyas don't do that. So that's another, I'm glad you bring it up. Just like Not every child who is a little bit of a bully is a kshatriya. Not every manager is a kshatriya. A manager means, management comes from the Italian word mano. Mano, which means hand. So manager handles things and handle people for the purpose of the organization. It could be a company, a for-profit company, non-profit company, it could be a religious organization. But the management manages certain assets for the purpose, hopefully for the purpose of the organization it serves. And they could be anything. They could be Shudras, they could be Vaishyas, they could be Kshatras, they could be Brahmanas. So let's, again, first of all, get, and I'm not saying as an answer to your question, I'm just saying as a general point, let's get a little bit unlocked on this stereotype that sometimes we have in our society. Managers are Kshatriyas? No, not necessarily. There may be some managers who are Kshatriyas that may move, there may be some managers, no. Just like, for instance, the element of taxing. No, the Kshatriyas maintain themselves and run the kingdom through taxing. And also there are some class of zamindars who are also taxing, taking the taxes. But and they do the same thing, but or a very similar thing, but the difference is in the mood. One is a Vaishya, and he protects people so that he can get the money. And one is a Kshatriya, and he gets the money so he can protect people. It's a complete different mood, but the same, they do the same thing, like that. So we'll take the last comment, or last two comments. I don't know. What time should I stop? I think I see people leaving. I think there is that purple shadow. Goes night. Night is still young. Okay. I mean, if you want some more questions, if you feel to have to go, go please.
Yeah. Thank you for the very nice. Thank you for the very nice class, Prabhu. In the conversation that Prabhupada spoke, there was this word discreet, so just wanted to remind, if you choose, we have a very nice TV, Mayapur TV.
Yes.
And you may be recorded. So if you want, you could ask them to edit it.
And edit what?
The comments that we hired a professional.
I think that was so many years ago that nobody can pursue us legally for that. Huh? Over 20 years. Over 20 years. You are an advocate? Okay, so that's in 77.
It's already in the air. It's live. It's live.
It's live, so. But then the word discreet was used by Harisori Prabhu. In other words, he was cautioning. Let's do it, if we can do it, but we should do it discreetly.
And
so I don't know what has to be edited. I mean, even unless you want to edit the whole folio.
My question was regarding identification of Kshatriyas. I mean, not only Kshatriyas, but also the other Varnas. Could you speak a little bit on how actually when one is a child, how the identification is done?
Oh, Srila Prabhupada explained that, without getting too much into the details, Srila Prabhupada explained that in a Gurukula, the Guru will see the psychology of the student and will see. There are signs, there are symptoms. So the elders will see, yeah, this person is like that. Elders generally shouldn't be the parents. I mean, the parents could assist in the process, but generally, again, stress on the word generally, parents have the tendency of seeing something in their children which sometimes is not there, no? Like one Gurukul, like expert Gurukul teacher was telling me how one devotee came to him, and he was saying, you know, my son is a Kshatriya, and can you teach him how to shoot astras with mantras? And it seems that we're taking prasad. There was the teacher, the father, and the son. And the teacher was joking. He said, "This kid cannot shoot khichdi in his own mouth." The lady is shooting yastras with them. So generally the teachers, the elders in the community, a little bit more detached from these imaginations of grandeur. So they say, they're more neutral in their assessments.
In this verse that as soon as Dhruva Maharaj placed the weapon in the bow, all illusion was removed.
Uh-huh.
So is that related to the fact that as soon as he was engaged in his duty, then things cleared up for him, or it was a very terrible happening, no? But what is the relationship between when one engages in one's duty and the fact of having the illusion removed?
My attempt at understanding is that this is a special weapon, it's a special arrow, it's a Narayana Astra, and was made personally by Narayana. Now, I don't have more details here, so I don't know. It would be interesting how Narayana personally made this arrow and somehow how it got to Dhruva Maharaj. It would be an interesting story, maybe some other Purana or somewhere. So this obviously is it's a very extraordinary weapon with extraordinary power. We could say that's a power of Narayana. No? So it seems that the setting of the arrow on the bow activated the weapon, and just the activation of that weapon made this guyaka nirmita, the maya guyaka, this yakshas maya illusion magics to dissolve. That's what seems to be happening.
And at the end it mentions about the chanting of the holy names.
Yes.
So I was wondering why Srila Prabhupada is bringing this point here.
Well, my experience is that Srila Prabhupada always brings up Sankirtan Yajna at any time, that any Yajna in the Bhagavatam, he brings up Sankirtan Yajna. I mean, that's our experience generally, no? And so, also because it's relevant to us, we are not going to look for Narayana Astra to not be Maya, you know, we change Hare Krishna. So that's our Narayana Astra, like that. That's the relevance. Okay? Okay? So the problem then.
Krishna. Yeah, another thorny issue you brought up is the death penalty. I know you've written an article about it, which I read and thought was very rounded, well-rounded. Perhaps the most difficult aspect of that discussion is in Kali Yuga, the judicial errors are very common. I'm in touch with the prison in the United States, where there's a death row, and I've been in touch with some of the inmates. One of them has been on death row for about 20 years, and it was found out recently that he was innocent.
Yeah.
So he was released, and thank God he was not killed earlier. So it might be a good thing that there is such a delay, at least. But perhaps also there is something to be said about the suspension of the death penalty, simply on the argument that there are too many errors committed, and they also, in a corrupt society, too many possibilities of killing your opponent simply by manipulating the judicial system. So I'd like you to maybe share a few thoughts on this. You want me to comment?
Yeah.
Yes, please.
I agree, and I did mention in passing, because it was not a major focus of this lecture, but I did mention in passing that my major issue is the application. Thank you for reading that article, and in that article I was especially expressing the concern that the devotees shouldn't dismiss the principle. We know there is a principle in application. Now, application can have a variety of diversity. There's a lot of diversity. Sometimes it may be applicable. As you pointed out, I agree with what you're saying. I can say it. I agree that sometimes the judges are so corrupted, they're so that you put the life of people in their hands. So I agree on that. At the same time, again, the point is the principle. The point is how we relate to Srila Prabhupada's words, Srila Prabhupada's statement in the Bhagavatam more than once. It's an element of loyalty. It's an element of how we present ourselves to the society. There are many aspects. It's not just the death penalty. Of course, my question, which is not necessarily to you now, but my question is that, okay, if the judges are so corrupted, so incapable, or the system is so unqualified, then why just the death penalty? Then you should, maybe we should suspend any judgment. Nobody should go in jail anymore. After all, what's the difference? Somebody get killed and say in a few moments he take another body, and in a few years he'll be adult again, or keeping somebody in jail, a very painful condition, very often very painful. Depends. I mean, if you're an inmate in Switzerland, it's not so hard, but in there are many countries of the world where living in jail is hell.
Especially in the United States, I've got very graphic descriptions of it.
Yeah, that's me. United States of America, it's an abnormal situation, because I think it's the highest percentage of citizens who are in jail. There are about 2 million people in jail, like almost 1% of the citizens are in jail, which is absurd. There are eight million people in jail in the world, more or less. And more than two million are just in the United States. So you see the percentage is completely off. So, if you introduce the idea that none of the judges are not qualified, so they cannot kill people, then my question would be, so why they could put people in jail for 10 years, 15 years, 30 years? Then, in other words, if we follow that logic, we may end up, by logic, say that nobody should be punished, because you never know if it's sure. So, obviously, it's not the jurisprudence course or anything like that, but there are these issues. And in fact, I don't know if you remember that article, there were 20 different comments. I reread some of them this morning, because connection, and there were 20 different arguments kind of elaborated, and they made some very interesting points. But my point stays, as Srila Prabhupada said, that we should at least accept the principle. We have more important business as a society, as a community of preachers and teachers, to push the death penalty. That's not our mission. It's not one of our 7 purposes to establish death penalty all over the world. That's not our purpose. We have things we need to first educate people. What is death? What is life? And that's our first purpose. So we should focus on that. But if the topic comes, we should not just too easily back off
That's my point.
Yeah, maybe you have a reference how to read your article, because I did say it was very well rounded all across the board. One thing which I don't think was mentioned is the statement by Srila Prabhupada, which I think I read in the folio, but I'm not absolutely sure. When he was asked about the death penalty and as opposed to life imprisonment, that life imprisonment, according to Prabhupada, was also a valid punishment and a purification for the murderer.
I'm not familiar with that particular quote. If you ask me a reference, if you go to Dandavats, you search death penalty, it comes. So Prabhu, I think this is the last comment or question we take.
I've always wanted to ask this question. I was wondering what, because you were talking about Kshatriyas and the Kshatriya spirit, that all my life, whenever I've seen a fight, I walk away from it. In other words, there's these men, I know men, who when they see a fight, they run towards it.
Uh-huh.
You know, like there's a very famous rock and roll song, Saturday Night is All Right for a Fight. You know, men who go on out and they want to fight.
Uh-huh.
So all my life, whenever I see fighting of any kind, I'm appalled, I turn away, and I don't want to deal with it at all. So my question is, am I a brahmana or just a coward? That's what I want to know.
I don't know if you're a brahmana or something else, or you're a coward. I wouldn't have the impudence to go that far and judge you. I mean, there are other elements, obviously, in judging. The things that comes to mind is that it seems to be more of an Ayurvedic, can be analyzed through the Ayurvedic point of view. See, it depends also on the balance of the different dhatus. So generally, people who have a lot of pitta, they get excited by the opportunity of fighting. They have a shorter fuse. Just the nature, because there's fire, so the fire comes up. People who are a predominance of kapha, they're not into fight. They're generally indifferent. They just back off again. Not necessarily of a cowardice, it's just that they don't relate to that. It's just not their scene. So maybe that's a key for you to analyze yourself in that way. Again, I can't really judge. I don't have the information for coming to any authoritative statement. So thank you very much for your attention. Srila Prabhupada ki, Vyantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Itai Guru Premanand.